The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you are interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment of this show, you are free to do so. Just send us an email so that we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop. This week, we spoke with members of Central PA Antifa about anti-fascist organizing in Pennsylvania, about some of the radical and racial and socioeconomic aspects of that place, and many more topics, but mainly about the National Socialist Movement counter-protest that folks are calling for on November 5th in Harrisburg. We talk about the logistics of the event and what sorts of things to expect and what sorts of solidarity folks are asking for. To hear another interview with Central PA Antifa, you can visit our comrades at itsgoingdown.org and follow the links to their podcast called The IGD Cast. To learn more about Central PA Antifa, you can get up with them on Facebook, on which you can search Central PA Antifa, or follow them on Twitter at Central PA Antifa. There is also a blog at centralpaantifascist.wordpress.com. So the first question that I have is, would you introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about what y'all do?
Well, we are Central Pennsylvania Antifa, or CPA, and we are an anti-racist, anti-fascist group who formed in Central Pennsylvania over a year ago. Most of our members knew one another in person, and we had a loose connection to one another, so we just started talking about how we really felt that it was time for an anti-fascist response in Central Pennsylvania, and we decided that we were just gonna go out and form one. So we noticed a rise in fascist activity in Reading, Allentown, Lancaster. So we started going out to like anti-immigration protests and counter-protesting. We've been to protests on like trans bathroom bills, days of solidarity, BLM marches. So we really are in a diverse region as far as activism. And we wanted to form a group that would create an anti-fascist or an Antifa presence in activist groups around the region.
That's awesome. You mentioned that you formed a little over a year ago.
Yes, approximately 1 year ago. Our first event was last winter in Reading. Some 3% patriots came out to protest our governor accepting 10,000 Syrian refugees, and they showed up in a small number, and that was our first event. We launched Central Pennsylvania Antifa in response to, you know, that act of open bigotry. So that was our first event, and we've been at a lot of stuff since.
Well, there's been a white supremacist hate group problem in Central PA going back at least as far as I can remember, since the mid-90s. And I'm going to date myself here a bit, but like, I was in the punk scene back in the 90s, and that's when I first discovered it and kind of cut my teeth on anti-racist action back then, running into like racist skinheads and neo-Nazis and things like that. And those same people that we were dealing with in the 90s kind of had run-of-the-mill out here unopposed since then, and they've grown into some actually highly organized groups that are, and there's some pretty dangerous people out this way now. So that's another reason we formed too. We were tired of white supremacy around here going unopposed.
Yeah, definitely. I remember when I'm from Pennsylvania too myself, and I remember when I was growing up in like the 80s and 90s. Also, I'm going to date myself. I remember it being thrown around that in Pennsylvania at the time, at least. I'm from northeastern PA.
Okay.
At the time, it was the highest concentration of KKK in the country, like in that area. And I think that like Pennsylvania sort of falls under the Antifa radar, or like has in the past fallen under the Antifa radar in this way. So I'm really glad that y'all are around and that other Antifa and PA are around, because it is a huge, huge, huge problem, like you said. How did y'all, you mentioned punk. How did y'all come into like anti-fascism, and is Central PA Antifa an anarchist group, or does it have like other loose politics?
We're primarily an anarchist group.
But we also have members who are leftists of other stripes. We work, you know, we try to work together with everyone who has left politics as much as possible. Because we feel like if you try to start excluding different groups based on nominal factors, then you're really not going to get anywhere in the fight against fascism.
Definitely. And did y'all come into anti-fascism via punk, or did you have like another inroad into that politics?
I myself did. That's where I first discovered what anti-fascism was, through the punk scene and through punk music and things like that.
I did as well. I was a punk in high school, and then I ended up getting into the crust punk scene pretty heavily and hanging out with like anarchists and left squatters. So that's pretty much where I came into it as well. I had broken away from it for a while, but came back to it shortly before starting up with CPA. So, and I think a lot of our members have had the same experience. Not all of them came up to it through punk, but I think a lot of them, at the very least, came up to it through exposure to that kind of culture.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And y'all are based in Harrisburg, is that right?
Not specifically. Okay. We have members. One of the reasons why we're Central PA Antifa is that we encompass quite a large number of different smaller groups throughout Central PA. So some in the Harrisburg region, some further east, some further north, some further south. We're all over.
That's awesome. I'm curious about like any other like far left or anarchistic organizing in the area. Are there other like, is there, you know, BLM or anti-racist groups or other antifas in your area?
There's BLM groups all around. There's Philly Antifa. And as far as the Central PA region, I think that the only ones I know of is Philly and ourselves. But we work with groups in Maryland as well. I mean, they're not, you wouldn't count them as Pennsylvania, but they're close enough.
Yeah, and there's a huge, as far as I understand it, a big like far right, like white supremacist presence in Maryland as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I'd really love to talk about Pennsylvania a little bit. It's a super, super interesting place, in my opinion. And I'd love to talk about its social history for a second. Because back in the early 1900s, it was a huge like industrial hub, and it attracted a lot of folks immigrating for work, mostly from Germany and Poland and Ireland. And recently, and I remember like this from going back to my hometown over the years, there's been a marked increase within the population of like Hispanic, Black, Asian, and like some Syrian folks like down in southern PA. Would you talk a little bit about like the socioeconomic climate of PA and the changing racial dynamic for a little while? That's kind of a big question.
Well, traditionally, of course, like you said, Pennsylvania was mostly Polish, German, Scotch-Irish a lot down here in central Pennsylvania. But I think throughout the history of Pennsylvania, there's always been diversity. I think that obviously the dominant narrative in Pennsylvania, as it was throughout the country, was the, you know, the Western European white male narrative. But I think there's a hidden history of diversity, both in culture, in religion, in political views in Pennsylvania, that I think a lot of people aren't as aware of. But more recently, I think that a lot of the move toward factory farming, which has brought in migrant and other low-paid workers, I think the move toward corporatism, where a lot of these small businesses, even in rural areas, are starting to close, other economic factors have really brought in a larger workforce that isn't white, isn't identified culturally with whiteness. Mm-hmm. So I think that's caused a clash in some of these rural areas where they didn't used to have such a diverse demographic. I know I myself grew up in a very small town in very rural Pennsylvania, and we didn't have, I think in a class of 300 people, I think we had literally three people of color. So there wasn't that big of an exposure. And it's interesting to note that, you know, touching on recent events, Trump supporters, it's often found that people who support Trump aren't the people who live in multiculturally diverse regions. It's people who live in primarily white regions that support Trump the most. And I think that you see that narrative playing out in Pennsylvania a lot right now. The Syrian refugee crisis was another one. Our first event was to counter-protest some people who didn't want Syrian refugees here. But we've noted that a lot of those are reactionary elements. So when the narrative in the mainstream media nationally is Syrian refugees are coming, be scared, suddenly we see all these patriot groups pop up and say no Syrian refugees, and then, you know, when the next boogeyman is trans people going into the correct bathroom, you know, suddenly it's got to keep these trans people out of the bathroom. Yeah. So I think that you see these same groups kind of piggybacking onto different political, you know, hot topics of the day. But these same people, it's always the same people. And like Elle mentioned, it started out in the 90s when we were coming up with a lot of the Keystone State skinheads forming. You know, nationally you had the skinhead groups were becoming a big thing. So I think that they started out there. They've really moved from there into supporting these other groups that we were talking about, like the Patriots, the 3%ers. So you see the same people popping up all over.
Definitely. Yeah, I mostly asked that question because I, like you, grew up in a super small town. I think it was a town of about 6,000. And my family and one other family were like basically the only non-white folks there. So I'm super curious about like your own experiences about that. Do you know if there's like still, do you have much contact with like indigenous groups in the area as well?
There really aren't many indigenous peoples groups in Pennsylvania.
It's not in our area.
Yeah, I don't know that I've come across that at all. I think there is one in Philly that mostly does like indigenous cultural events, but I don't know of any indigenous rights groups in Pennsylvania.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I was hearing about like even old AIM chapters in Philly for a while, but yeah. So you mentioned like the 3% militia and the Keystone State skinheads a little while ago. I'd love to talk a little bit more about like the far right and like white supremacist presence in Pennsylvania. Would you talk a little bit about that? And maybe like, I know I didn't put this in the questions that I sent you, but will you talk a little bit about how and if you have seen Trump's presence like embolden people in your area?
Absolutely. When Trump came out to Harrisburg for the election, for the primary election. He spoke at the Pennsylvania Farm Show. Mm-hmm. His presence at the farm show caused traffic all over Harrisburg to shut down for 3 solid hours.
KU was there.
KU was there. Keystone United, Keystone State Skinheads. They actually acted as security for Trump at that event. So
unofficially,
you know, obviously they were self-appointed security, but security nonetheless.
Oh my God.
They were not asked to leave. More recently, we've seen KU stickers go up on, you know, street signs, newspaper boxes. So you're definitely seeing an amped up presence where you didn't even see one 2 years ago. I think Keystone State Skinheads had been trying to lay low for a while. They'd done a lot of work with Matt Heimbach, so they were kind of getting on his trip of being the politically acceptable far right. They started to infiltrate local party politics on the Republican end. So they were kind of moving in that direction, and then Trump appeared and they realized that they didn't have to hide anymore. So I absolutely think that not only are we seeing an emboldened white nationalist movement in Pennsylvania, but we're also seeing a very highly networked one.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it across the nation, but I see it a lot here in central Pennsylvania. Even like your closet, or let's say your non-organized racist, they're emboldened. They're coming out of the woodwork being proudly racist when, you know, before this election, they wouldn't have done that.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely. No, I was in a position to see a bunch of like talking heads on media, and I wanted to like confirm like what they were saying, because the line is like, at least in the like liberal mass media, is that like Trump is emboldening the racists. And sometimes it's true in places, like I talked to somebody from Georgia who was just like, yeah, it's a little bit more complicated than that. They've sort of always been here, sort of always been doing their thing. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
They've always been here too, but I definitely think they're getting a certain element of racists here are definitely, I feel more emboldened. They feel like it's okay to come out and be openly racist now.
Yeah, definitely.
At least around, and I'm speaking just regionally here. I don't know about other places.
I think organized groups like KU or KSS have always been doing their thing. But for a good chunk of the early 2000s, they did their thing privately in their own, you know, their own private spaces. They had barbecues at other people's houses. You know, they had all their events on private land. Now they feel comfortable walking down the streets of Philadelphia, handing out white nationalist flyers again. So I think that's the difference. They have always been here and they have always been doing their thing. But now they don't feel like they have to hide it.
Yeah, that's a super good point. Will you talk a little bit about, like, who are the Keystone State Skinheads? Or you mentioned they also go by Keystone United. Wikipedia, I looked it up super fast just now, says that they started in 2001. But it seems like they've been around for just a little bit longer than that. Will you talk a little bit about the KSS?
Well, the founders of KSS, or Keystone United, they may have officially formed in the early 2000s, but I know we were dealing with the founders of the group that are currently still involved. We were dealing with them in the 90s, like I said earlier in the interview. So a lot of these are the same people.
Steve Smith and Bob Goss, yeah.
Yeah, the two co-founders is Steve Smith, who's actually a Republican committeeman now. And what county is that?
Bucks, I think.
No.
No, Elk? One of the rural counties, Luzerne.
Yeah, it's Steve Smith and Bob Goss are the co-founders of Keystone United, and they've been around since forever. Look, you used to hear Bob Goss's name at punk shows in, like, 1994, so...
Yeah. And are they, like, straps and boots kinds of skinheads, or are they another kind of... Are they sort of, like, the new sort of skinhead that you see with in, like, fatigues and stuff?
They used to be... But I think part of their reason for going from KSS to Keystone United was they tried to change their whole image. I think they realized nobody really wanted to get down with the whole boots and straps thing. Nobody takes that serious, especially politically. And I think they wanted to be taken more seriously and start to get into politics. So they tried to, like, rebrand themselves, so to speak. Hence the name change, image change. And another thing that's been going on lately I don't know if you know who Matt Heimbach is and the Traditional Workers Party.
I have heard of them, but it would be awesome if you could give just a couple sentences on them. It never hurts to repeat.
Well, what you were talking about, things that have happened since, you know, Trump's been on everybody's minds, let's say. Keystone United and Traditional Worker Party have formed an alliance, and they've been having meetings here in the heart of central Pennsylvania, not in backyards or at barbecues, but in state government buildings. So,
yeah, Matt Heimbach came onto the white nationalist scene back in like 2012 or 2013, I think, when he was still in college. He went to college just down in Maryland, which is why you see this high concentration of white supremacy, like open white supremacists there now. He started the White Students Union on his college campus at Towson, and it snowballed from there. He has the ability to, I mean, he looks very completely genial. You know, he doesn't have his head shaved. He doesn't wear camo. He doesn't wear boots, no braces, none of that. He looks like a frat boy.
So Skype cut out on us at this point. So let's hear Discharge with The Nightmare Continues off of Hear Nothing, See Nothing, Say Nothing, which came out in 1982. This is The Final Straw on WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, and we're speaking to Central PA Antifa. How's it going? I think we got disconnected.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, hey, that's no problem. It could very well have been a problem on this end. You were just talking about Matt Heimbach and basically how he like doesn't look like a Nazi, but he looks like a frat boy.
Oh,
okay, that's where we dropped off.
Well, yeah. Like,
I said frat boy.
Yeah, and Skype shit. Skype was like, no.
Exactly. But yeah, so KU had already gone through, you know, their rebranding image, and they were trying to look around and see what kind of connections they could make, and they saw what success Matt Heimbach was having recruiting on college campuses. He became a rising star on the far right pretty quickly, and by 2013, he was speaking at KU events, and they were, you know, the Traditionalist Workers Party and the Keystone State Skinheads. They've been having meetings together at least once a year ever since. They had two meetings of the TWP and KSS in 2015 alone, I think. In the last year, they've done one meeting at the State Museum.
Yeah.
And then they had another meeting, I think, also at the State Museum.
And in Philly.
They also met in Philly together. They have a backyard barbecue in the summer, and they invited TWP that time, I think. So they're very closely allied at this point.
Dang. And I heard in y'all's interview with It's Going Down that in your area specifically, one of the people you mentioned, Richard something, is maybe part of the Keystone State skinheads and also in politics in your area. Is that true? Am I remembering that correctly?
That's Steve Smith.
Steve Smith. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. He is one of the founders of Keystone State Skinheads, and he has been an elected Republican committee man. I'm not sure how many terms, but a Republican committee man is basically like a party functionary. They do some poll watching. They do tons of voter recruitment. They're the ones out there knocking on doors, trying to get people to sign up to join the Republican Party. They're the ones that are out there trying to kind of feed the platform to people who were undecided. So suddenly you have this element of white supremacy that's out there face to face trying to literally practicing how to convince people that they're right.
Yeah, definitely. I know that like far right and even, you know, fascist or KKK or, you know, stuff in that vein, there has always been a presence of that element in politics, in mainstream politics. But yeah, I think it's coming to light a little bit more, and even in our interview with Atlanta Antifa a couple weeks ago, they were saying that in their town it's been seeming like national socialism and KKK and stuff has a bit more money behind it than they did like even 5 to 10 years ago. Are you seeing like a bit more money and like a bit more influence happening in your area as well?
I would say so. I think that you're seeing, again, people like Heimbach, who went to a well-known university, was able to travel to Greece for his honeymoon to meet with the Golden Dawn.
Oh, gross. Really?
Yeah. Isn't that, why would you? I can't. But... I think you have these upper middle class people now who are coming onto this white supremacy and far right ideology. And you even have the old heads, the Steve Smiths, the Bob Gosses, who when they were 20, they didn't have any money. But now they're 45. Now they own a home or a ranch. Now they own a nice truck. Now they have the ability to throw money around a little bit more. So you're seeing this ability to put money into sophisticating their message as well, you know, and sophisticating their image.
Yeah, definitely. This is something that I've been thinking about for a second. So like far right activities such as the KKK or like National Socialist Movement, which we'll talk about in a second, has sometimes been called the crisis arm of the state. What do you make of this, and what do you think this like rise in far right activity means for this country, what with like Trump being the boogeyman or like the scapegoat or whatever for liberals to be like, oh yeah, that's a fascist. But what do you think that it means for like how we can move forward, or what do you think it means for what is happening right now?
Well, I certainly think that we're following the same old pattern of economic crisis causing anger that the status quo manages to redirect towards oppressed groups to avoid civil unrest. So I think that you see this play out in history again and again, where fascism, as you said, really is the crisis arm of the state. It brings it's like the harbinger of the decay of capitalism. But at the same time, you know, anytime anything cracks, there's always room for light to get through. And I think that this can open the door to promote anti-fascist and left ideas as well as fascist ideas. I think that we can take that same old story and we can learn from it. We can use the responses that were effective before, and we can find ways to brainstorm new responses to it together so that maybe we can prevent this cycle from playing out yet again.
That is so on point. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I agree totally. Maybe on that tip, how has Central PA Antifa been received by the folks who live in your area, just by like residents or students?
We've been really well received. I think that there are a lot of people who were becoming very alarmed at the things that they saw happening. And the oppression that they saw increasing, And I think that they were looking to see how they could help out. So we've worked with tons of different groups since we formed. We've worked with This Stops Today Harrisburg. We've worked with Make the Road, which is a Latino and immigrants rights group. We've worked with Animal Alliance of Greater Reading in animal rights activism. So we've been really lucky to have found so many comrades, and we've been really happy that they've been so willing to let us join in the struggle.
Also, thanks to social media, people from out of state, all over the East Coast, all the way down to even close to where you are, have been reaching out to us, wanting to know how they can start their own anti-fascist network, their own groups, and things like that. So, like Kay said, it's been really great, the response from everywhere, not even just in central Pennsylvania.
That's excellent. Is it hard to start your own Antifa?
I wouldn't say hard. What would you call it?
I think the main difficulty that we've found is that we're all working class, which means
finding
that
time.
We're all super busy.
Yeah, that's the hard
a lot
part.
Of us have families. A lot of us are working two or three jobs. We had some that were trying to run a struggling business at one point. So it's been, you know, that's been the main difficulty
yeah.
for us, is just being able to find the time, not only to find the time to come out as a group and show solidarity, but also the time to do the day-to-day planning activities that go along with that. So, but again, social media has been the saving grace there. We've really been able to do a lot of coordinating that we otherwise wouldn't have been able to do because our region is so large.
Yeah, Skype meetings is where it's at.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Time is always the thing. Like, I don't... Yeah. Anymore, like, I don't really know any anarchists or anti-fascists who aren't working class.
Yeah.
And I don't really know a way around it. And if anybody who's listening right now or y'all have workarounds for not having enough time or energy, that's super, super real. Before we start talking about November 5th, I wanted to get y'all's opinion on the, like, I've been seeing in Antifa recently sort of a broad application of the term fascism, and I was wondering how y'all felt about that.
Well, I think it depends on whether you wish to define it strictly politically as the corporate ownership of the state apparatus, or if you are willing to or wish to use it in the broader application, which would basically be, in my opinion, the opposite end of the spectrum from anarchism, where anarchism is a complete deconstruction of illegitimate hierarchies. Fascism could be seen to be a solid construction of very rigid hierarchies. And I think that there's a spectrum in between there, obviously, more than really like a black and white interpretation. However, I also think that the term fascism does tend to be overused, and it can reduce the impact of the word itself.
Yeah.
The other thing that makes it difficult to define and identify fascism is that it appropriates left images and ideas very easily. Like you can see with the Traditionalist Worker Party, their symbol almost looks like the old, you know, three arrows pointed to the left. They take over left ideology. They take over, you know, left...
They appropriate a lot of communist imagery.
Yes.
Which is funny, since that's like their arch nemesis.
And the language that they use tends to shift in that direction, too, and appropriate things like the Workers' Party, the National Socialist Movement. You know, they really tend to be appropriative in that sense. So that tends to cause it to shift so rapidly that you almost can't come down with a specific definition. The idea of fascism itself, of course, is a very old one. You know, the actual symbol of the fascists, which is still in use by groups today.
Augustus Invictus.
Yeah, that jackass. Still in use today was, you know, a symbol of Roman Empire and was revived by Mussolini. So, you know, there's definitely... Within that shifting definition, there's definitely an underlying current of sameness.
That's really interesting what you brought up regarding the branding of fascism as being like appropriative of the left. And I know that that's always sort of been, not always sort of been the case. Like you said, it was Roman Empire based before, but like, what do you think that's about? Is it like a sort of to make it more palatable, or because lefty sort of symbolism has been around for a long time and like is associated with like violent revolution or whatever? What do you think about that?
Well, they're targeting the same people. They're targeting the working class.
I think it's about recruitment. I think that they're targeting the working class just as much as, you know, trying to convince them that they don't need leftist ideas. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I think that it's more about recruitment. I also think that it's about blending in.
Yeah, definitely. So, the main reason that we reached out to y'all was to talk about this rally that is happening in Harrisburg on November 5th. It's a National Socialist Movement rally. Could y'all talk about what the aim of this rally is and how many National Socialist Movement people do you think will be there?
The aim of the rally, as they stated it, was basically that they wanted to show up in the what they consider the heart of democracy, which is the capital of the state of Pennsylvania, and they wanted to do it immediately prior to the election because they wanted to make a political statement with it. I don't think that I've been made aware of any other aims of theirs other than that really generalized intention, but we know that there aren't really that many National Socialist Movement members worldwide, so we don't anticipate a huge number of them coming out. Back in September, for instance, they came up to Cowder's Court here in Pennsylvania, and there were 7 of them. So, you know, they had a similar rally in Buffalo. Buffalo Antifa showed up. There was 1 or 2 National Socialist members. Buffalo shut them down immediately. There was, what, over 300 Antifa showed up to that?
Yeah,
so, I mean,
one showed up on
they haven't really had a whole lot of success with their rallies recently as far as getting numbers out there.
Do you think that it's a coincidence that it's happening on Guy Fawkes Day?
That's a good question.
That is a good question. I mean, that could honestly, I really don't know. They could have just gotten lucky, or they could have deliberately done it and assumed that a lot of us would be busy at the Million Mask March. So,
yeah, for sure. Because Guy Fawkes was a super interesting character, because he's like become this kind of figurehead of like lefty anarchism, mostly via like a reappropriation into like anarchist media, like the Alan Moore comic V for Vendetta. But he was this really odd Catholic monarchist, and he wanted to reinstate a Catholic king, and that's why he was trying to blow up Parliament or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny because if he were around today, Antifa would be opposing him.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah. So, but I mean, like, we got to have our imagery. I'm not gonna take anyone's mask away from them at all, unless they're a Klansman.
Anymore, when I see a Guy Fawkes mask, I just think of Anonymous, which tends to teeter to the left or the right, depending on what circles you're in.
What sorts of solidarity are y'all hoping to see from Antifa in your area and Antifa out of town? And like Antifa presence always sort of tends to, on the whole in this country, like outnumber fascist or far-right presences, but like how many Antifa do you expect to be there?
I would say more than 100. I mean, optimistically.
We're hoping for a real solid turnout. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from affiliate groups. We have people coming up from your area in Asheville. We have people coming down from Buffalo, New York City, New England. So we have quite a few, you know, people that have already responded to the Facebook event page, have already messaged us and said, hey, we're bringing a crew. So we definitely expect a solid turnout. I think we're going to be able to shut them down pretty effectively.
That's awesome. Do you think many locals will show up?
Yeah, not as Antifa.
Our group and groups, other groups in the region are probably going to show up. We also have a few hyper-local groups around Harrisburg that are coming out. The local BLM affiliate group has said they're coming. There's actually going to be a liberal noise-making protest across the street that looks like it's probably going to have a couple dozen people come out to it. And they're going to be banging on pots and yelling and chanting, and they're not there to confront, they're there to drown out. So that'll be very helpful for us, because we're there to block out as well.
For sure. I like it when liberal endeavors sort of work with Antifa endeavors. Sometimes the liberals are there to, like, quote, keep the peace or whatever, and I'm glad to see that is maybe not the case here.
We have a little bit of both.
There's another liberal group that's holding a unity rally on the other end of town, so it's not all roses around here.
Oh,
but
man.
Yes, there's local liberal groups here that want absolutely no response to the NSM event at all. They think the best response is to just don't do anything whatsoever, which is ridiculous in my opinion, but
that is ridiculous.
That's how we got to this point.
Definitely.
Just letting them have carte blanche of the area. In the area.
Definitely. It's this, like, politics of complete avoidance. You encounter that a lot in your area?
I think Antifa in general encounters that.
It happens everywhere. It even happens in leftist spaces on the internet quite a lot.
Yeah. There's always that rhetoric where, you know, Antifa is just as bad for showing up. I don't know if you ever heard that, but we hear it all the time.
Yeah, I don't even know what to make of that. I think that it's just complete stonewalling, and there's just, like, no, I don't really know of any way to interface with that, or even if it's even useful to do so. Yeah, we encounter that some here. I know that the Atlanta folks encounter that some as well. So yeah, sympathies to that. But, and I mean, unity rally, unity for what, I wonder?
They're going to eat hot dogs and
sing kumbaya.
Yeah, like 10 miles away.
Well, hot dogs sound all right. Will you talk a little bit about the National Socialist Movement? It sounds like on its face, if you just listen to those words, like, oh, sounds like all right. But didn't they used to be the American Nazi Party?
Yes.
They were the American Nazi Party. I believe that they split from them prior to or during the early 90s. A guy named Jeff Shope, broke off from them. Okay, in the mid-70s. We're looking at some stats now.
Yeah, Jeff Shope's the leader.
Yeah, and I mean, they're your basic Nazis. We like to refer to them as Nazi cosplay because they wear the brown shirts, they wear the armbands. I mean, they don't show up, you know, in jeans and a t-shirt. So I think there's an element of clownishness that follows them around. I think traditionally they've kind of been shunned for that reason by other white nationalist groups. I know that traditionally white power skinheads want nothing to do with the National Socialist Movement. They think they're a joke.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I think with the rebranding that a lot of the white supremacist groups are trying to do to be taken more seriously, they can't get down with, you know, people that dress up like the SS still. I don't know.
For serious, though. They're being serious about it.
Yeah.
Dang. Well, Halloween will have passed, so weird.
You're a week late.
Yeah. Do you get much NSM in your area, or are they all bussing in from out of town?
There is a local chapter. I don't know how big they are. There's been rumors of bussing in. So we really don't know how many NSM to anticipate, but I do anticipate maybe some Klan and even some Keystone United members to be there. This is looking to be pretty big, so I imagine there's going to be interest from all types of groups. Well, then again, I could be wrong.
Well, it will be the heart of democracy, so...
Yeah.
So where do you think anti-fascism is going from here? I think we're in a really, really interesting moment in the country. And even though, like, Trump is sort of being discredited, the people that he empowered are still around and are still going to continue to be around even if he doesn't get elected. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think they might even be worse if he doesn't get elected. They're going to be angry as hell.
I think no matter what, I think that the groups that Trump has galvanized are way more dangerous than a Trump presidency could ever be.
True.
Trump is definitely a problem, but not because of himself as a person, but because he's a lightning rod. And he's a rallying point, and he's a very public one. So I think that anti-fascists are going to be dealing with the aftermath of this election for quite a while. And I think it's going to get real wild after the election, regardless of who wins. You know, if Trump wins, the white supremacists feel like they have carte blanche to go out and celebrate. If Trump loses, they're going to be so angry that they're going to be out in the streets. So I think this is a moment for Antifa to network, to share ideas, to come out to the streets and meet them where we know they're going to be.
I think anti-fascists definitely are going to have their work cut out for them, but it could also, the silver lining is, though, it's also a chance for us to come together and become stronger.
Definitely. K&L, that's all the questions that I have. Do you have anything else you'd like to add for this interview?
No.
No, I don't think so. We just wanted to let all of your listeners know that they also are welcome to come out on the 5th of November at the Capitol steps. And for more information, they can check our Facebook page or they can follow our Twitter. The Facebook page is Central PA Antifa, and the Twitter is at Central PA Antifa.
Awesome. Hey, y'all, it has been such a pleasure talking to you. Y'all are so legit. Thank you so much for coming onto the show and for...
Oh, no problem. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you
so much for having us on.
Yeah, absolutely. We really enjoyed it.
We just spoke with K&L of Central PA Antifa about the 5th of November National Socialist Movement rally in Harrisburg, PA, and the resistance to that event. For more information, you can follow these folks on Facebook by searching Central PA Antifa or on Twitter at Central PA Antifa. We're listening to Halo of Grey by Kara Nair off of their 2016 split with Wildspeaker called Guilt and His Reflection. Stay tuned next week for conversations from the North American Anarchist Black Cross Conference. Thanks for listening. And now we're hearing some of Side A of Skagos's 2013 release Anarchic out on Eternal Warfare. It's really long, and I highly recommend hearing all of it sometime. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. And you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you are interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment of this show, you are free to do so. Just send us an email so that we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop.